Blog Talk Radio.
There's some dangerous large carnivore out there.
And I saw that bird kick a young deer off the road from a mile away.
And it was just about getting dark, and we started panicking, running down the bridge, not really having any clue what was throwing rocks in our vicinity, good-sized rocks. And I stopped long enough to get a 357 out of my backpack and look back, and that's when I thought I saw one.
For a week, the town of Defiance was being harassed by a werewolf. And it's actually attacked two railroad workers, killed livestock. You know, just a lot of weird stuff that was going on.
Sunday evening, Monster Xers. This is your host and founder of the Sasquatch Coffee Company, Gunnar Monson. With me today, calling in from the road, is my good friend, Shane Corson. Shane, are you there?
I am here, and yes, I am calling from the road, so forgive me if there's any background noise.
All right. So you are up visiting with Derek and David and members of the Olympic Project this weekend. Of course, you are a member,
yeah.
So.
Yeah. It was a great weekend.
Anything? Did you have anything interesting happen?
You know, it was a chance for a lot of the EOP members to get together, and then it was an opportunity to invite some friends up on a non-expedition weekend just to brainstorm, chat, and talk to one another, do some hiking, exploring, some research and whatnot. But overall, it was a pretty quiet weekend. You know, I got to go check out some trail cameras, replace those. Got to go check out some other interesting areas, and do a lot of brainstorming. You know, we had Cindy Dosen was up there, Ron Moorhead, John Pickering, Matthew Jones, Cindy Cadell, and Derek and his wife went out. There was a lot of people up there. And it was a good time hanging out and talking to each other and seeing what everybody's up to and getting prepared for this, some of the upcoming expeditions and some other exploits as well.
Yeah, it's always, I think the winter's kind of a quiet time, so squatching season's about to pick up here as we get, the weather starts to get a little better, so. Couple of announcements. The Ohio Bigfoot Conference coming up on May 16th at South Fort Lodge and Conference Center. You can check it out at www.ohiobigfootconference.com. Coming up is the second annual Florida Skunk Ape Conference hosted by winner of Bigfoot Bounty, Stacy Brown. You can find out more information there. www.thesasquatchhunters.com. And the first annual Team Squatching USA Habituation Conference is being held April 24th through the 26th, and that's up in Washington, and hosted by Dr. Matt Johnson. You can go check that out at www.teamsquatchingusa.com. A lot of it's, like I said, it's kicking off the Squatching season, and I know that coming up in February, I think it is the 15th, is Hopsquatch is back on. So we had an event a couple weeks ago where they introduced Sierra Nevada puts out a Bigfoot beer every year, and so the last couple of years, Hopsquatch has sponsored that event, and it was a good time. So,
yeah, guy really puts a good, no matter what the guy's involved with, he always manages to put something so great together. The Bigfoot Lunch Club, the Hopsquatch events are fantastic. We're always with great speakers. Can't say enough about it.
Yeah, it's one of my, of course, it's something I always look forward to, mark my calendar. So, if you're in the area, check it out. You can go to, he's got a Hopsquatch Facebook page as well as the Bigfoot Lunch Club. So, Crip Corner just posted the link in the chat room. So, well, I have to say last week was one of my favorite shows hosting Monster X. We had William Allen Barnes, the director of the Falcon Project, on, and it was pretty cool. I really like the research aspect of Bigfooting and somebody going out and having an extended research project and utilizing the technology that they're going to use is pretty cool. So,
I agree. Totally agree.
Go ahead.
Oh yeah, I totally agree with you. You know, it was a great show, fantastic show. I was really glad to have William on, and I'm excited for the guy, regardless of the outcome. Like I said on the show, and just because it actually looks like it's actually going to happen, he's going to get his blimp in the air. He's going to have this ground crew. We've got a few little kinks worked here and there, but I'm excited for William. I'm excited of the possibilities. Excited what 2015 may bring, and it's something positive. So I'm happy about that. Something positive.
Yeah, I mean, the guy's been working on the project for, he said, 6 years to get it off the ground. So, it is exciting. And he's working with Dr. Meldrum and they actually have a group that is vetting the evidence. So it isn't that they're just finding stuff and saying, so
yeah,
that's something to me that's been lacking in Bigfooting is, there's a lot of groups out there and collecting evidence but how much of it actually gets analyzed and then vetted by a independent council, basically. It's a great idea. So
yeah, and gonna have a lot of people. He's got like a few kinks to work out, but it's gonna have a lot of positive stuff going on with this with working with a lot of the right people. Be great. I can't wait to hear you. I'll have him back on the show hopefully and talk about what he's up to. I know he plans on keeping everybody updated on what they're doing, what they're finding, that sort of thing, so one can hope that everything will just fall into place and that they can just get this thing fully rolling and with the guys on the field safety and caution, cause they're going to be out there for 6 months and some maybe longer. So
yeah, it was unfortunate. He was talking about, William was talking about that there was going to be an article in the Wall Street Journal. And then when it came out, it was, the Falcon Project seemed to be buried at the end and the large part of the article. Did you see the article?
Yeah, I sure did, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunate is that it seemed typical with seems like the media likes to play up the hoaxing, any negative part of Bigfoot research, but a large, probably three-quarters of the article was talking about Tom Biscardi trying to start up an IPO for Bigfoot research. So, and
yeah.
I think William said he had been interviewed by the reporter for like 4 hours or some, I mean, it was a long time, and they had one little quote in the article from him. So,
it's ridiculous, and that's what the media likes to focus on.
They seem to like, you know, to, if they're not just flat out making fun of their focusing on any possible hoaxing and you know, that kind of stuff is,
yeah.
I guess it's just, you know, what they think their audience wants to hear. So, but it was, I just, it's cool that there was some bit about the Falcon Project in there. So,
yeah.
But,
you know, but it is what it is, you know, just got to live with it. Cause unfortunately, you know, that's not going to stop until there's some really hardcore evidence. I mean, stuff that, you know, the media will look at in a positive light, which right now they're not going to do that. And they love making fun of this topic, as do most. But some do take it serious, and like William and we do as well, and there's many others out there. So just got to keep plugging away, keep forging ahead.
Yeah, I think it's just a matter of plus I think, you know, the way that research has been done up till now, for the large part of things not being processed, analyzed scientifically, the people here, you know, we got a lot of people out there doing the best they can, but I know I've ran into people that have claimed that they've had experiences that have made reports and have found things, and they, you know, they don't even know what to do if they do find things. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, and that's right. It is a big the season finale of Finding Bigfoot is on tonight. If you're up for that,
mm-hmm.
I know that I actually did watch it. I hadn't watched it in a while. I watched it last week. It's still, I still get a kick out of it. I mean, I like the town halls and stuff and the reports that they get from witnesses. You know,
yeah.
So, the Ramble wants to know if Cliff is going to get eaten by a Bigfoot. I'm just thinking probably, you know, we're hoping not. So it's funny because Cliff goes out by himself a lot when he's not on TV and doesn't carry a firearm. And like he said, his dream is to get, you know, if he's going to go, being ripped to shreds by a Squatch is his like dream way of going out. So I wish him luck. I mean,
yeah,
I think that's, you know, one of those things that might seem like a good idea at the time later if it were to actually happen.
Yeah.
But
Cliff takes it serious, though, despite, you know, the show. It's just a TV show. There's going to be more of those type of shows coming out, no doubt, and people either like him or hate him or just don't really care.
Some
of these people involved with the shows are serious. Yeah, yeah. I mean, involved. They're serious, though.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, Renee was not a Bigfoot researcher before, prior to the show, but she had an interest in Bigfoot because I had met her up in Washington when we were having a BFRO expedition up on the peninsula up there. So she came in, she was, you know, her job was out counting fish at the time, so I think it was probably the furthest thing from her mind at the time that she'd be on a TV show about Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Of course, Matt Moneymaker's been in Bigfooting for quite a while. You're going to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I can't wait for for the show that I actually can't get over because, you know, Bo was actually a part of us and do some research because of the show. So I'm kind of looking forward to the downtime, getting a chance to work with Bubba more in the field and that, you know, I'm getting Cliff up, you know, and going out in the field with him. So I'll be, so I'm kind of looking forward to the that part of the show, you know, and get some of these guys out in the woods and doing you know, full time research.
Exactly. I mean, I saw Cliff present a couple times in the last couple of years, and he basically is ready to be done. I mean, he'd much rather be out in his research area and looking for Bigfoot in Oregon than running all over the country. But I mean, it actually is a good, you know, it's a good job. So.
Yeah, you get paid to travel
and do what you love. What's that?
Said so you get, you know, you get paid to travel, talk to people, you know, and do, you know, what you love. What's bad about that? I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, no, I mean it's been a great opportunity, I'm sure. I mean, that's like you said, the biggest thing is there's like a million and a half people that watch Finding Bigfoot, and it's raised awareness. I think that it's allowed people that have had encounters to come forward and feel more comfortable talking about it. I've had people that have come to me, and I, you know, I'm pretty well known in my area for that I'm into Bigfoot, and in fact, it's weird. This week was, and I had two occasions where something came up. I was playing pool with my girlfriend on Wednesday, and one of the guys there swears up and down that was in the tavern, you know, hey, Bigfoot guy, and we've met before, but he was talking about, he swears up and down that he has seen the costume that was used to make the Patterson-Gimlin footage. He claims that he saw it about 8 years ago. He knows who financed it, and saw it hanging in this guy's business. I think he said it was probably 8 years ago. And it's funny that whether or not that's true, I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, he may have just seen a costume, but I still lean towards thinking that that's a footage of a live creature. So,
yeah. Hey, Bigfoot guy.
Hey, Bigfoot guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these, you know, Finding Bigfoot did create that kind of awareness, and on there's a double-edged sword. There's a lot of negative stuff that came along with the show like Finding Bigfoot, including many other shows that tried to mimic their success, and then you got the positive stuff. So, but it is neat though. A lot of people did have and will come out of their show and share their stories or encounters or pieces of evidence now because of shows like that. I've been approached a ton. I know you have, Gunner, and Limit Project as well. There's a lot to be said about it, and we'll see what the next show will be. I know of one or two that are going to be coming out. That I can say one of them is a step above the rest. I'm not sure about the second one, but so some exciting stuff there.
Yeah, the other Bigfoot conversation I had this week was I have a grocery store in Garibaldi, Oregon, and of course people come in and occasionally want to talk Bigfoot. So this gal and her husband, she claimed that when she was 14 years old that a Bigfoot tried to kidnap her by pulling her out of an open bedroom window down, and I believe it was they were living in Klamath Falls at the time. So that was pretty interesting. And but they now live up in Tillamook County, and she's claimed to have had multiple sightings and and found footprints and I don't know. I always wonder about people that, but I've had more than one person that has claimed multiple encounters throughout their life, and then that's always interesting to me. If there's some kind of, then you're getting into some woo-woo stuff with, you know, do people put off a particular energy, and or is it just the way people carry themselves in the woods? Because I'm, you know, I know that there's a difference. If I was a Bigfoot, I could tell the difference between a guy walking around, you know, a hunter with a rifle, and how they're moving through the woods, and people just walking around with just checking things out. So, you know, people are just having a casual time in the woods. So, I don't know.
Well, that's something, you know, Derek, you know, Randall talks about a lot is being a guide and a pipeline hunter and all that, you know, how to carry yourself in the woods. You know, every animal when you step in that woods can read you. You know, I mean, giving off a sense of being frightened, angered, you know, the way you're moving in the forest, you know, your intentions, those can be read, you know, and they can be felt. So I would imagine, you know, I don't know, speaking to people with multiple encounters or supposed multiple, you know, these guys, that there's, I personally don't know if, I don't think there's, things are being drawn to them because of their actions or the way they handle themselves or just whatever they're giving off. I do find it, you know, hard to fathom and swallow these people that have, they claim to have multiple encounters. With that girl, the last story you were talking about, did she describe the Sasquatch?
Out the window? Yeah, she actually talked about the hair hanging off of its arm, you know, and the way she demonstrated was, you know, 4 or 5 inches of hair hanging off of its arm. So, the story of when she was 14, she said that the way that her sister actually saved her, because she pulled a slap from underneath the bed, you know, that the mattress sits on, and started whacking this Bigfoot on the arm, and that her mom came in with a, because of course she was screaming, and came in with a rifle, didn't shoot it, but it took off. So, I mean, that's
wow,
very interesting. And I'll talk to her some more and see what, you know, they just, I don't know. It's, you remember you came down with Larry and Tanya when we went out up the, and investigated that report that the guy had come and told me about, going up over the
oh yeah,
hillside.
Down there, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, ironically, this couple bought property where the road that we went up to investigate that area, they bought like 18 acres of property out just across the main road that's out there from that area. So
oh wow,
yeah. So, and there's been other reports and from back in that area. I mean, it just makes sense that if there isn't really a Bigfoot, that they'd be in that area out
absolutely,
you know, out in the coast range. I mean, there's just a lot of open country out there. So
yeah, areas like you know, Tillamook, Seaside, a lot of those areas, they just amaze me with the amount of life and the amount of forest and just the remoteness, and there's a lot to be said about those areas, and it makes whole sense. Why not? I mean, and they're very temperate, aren't they? I mean, you've lived in that area, very temperate.
yep. Yeah, that's, I mean, it's not an area that they would have to move in and out of that, you know, if they moved on the climate, and there's always deer and elk and coyotes. And one of the cool stories from from it's on the BFRO website. There's an area back behind basically where Canning Beach is, and there's a old growth there's a stand of old growth with a lake in the middle of it. And it talks, the story is this guy had been out and was walking down to this lake to go fishing, and he had a rifle with him, and that he got down there and saw something. At first he didn't know what it was, hunched over doing something, and then eventually shot his rifle, and it stood up, and it was a Bigfoot, and it kind of, I guess, looked around and went back to what it was doing, and he shot his rifle again, and it got up and acted pissed off, irritated, and jumped a ravine. Well, when he went over when he got to where it had been, it had been eating a coyote in a trap.
So, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So of course, Todd Neese had his sighting in the Coast Range, out by Saddle Mountain. In fact, he actually talked to a gal shortly after he'd had his sighting, then had another sighting in the same area, close proximity, within like a month of when he had his. So, and then he talked. What's that?
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
And then he had an expedition out there with, you know, a while later, and with Peter Byrne. I don't know who else was with him, but where he was taking a leak by a tree, and he says one of them came up behind him and screamed at him. So, and he froze. I mean, he just froze solid. There's been, and it's weird, I've had reports from the area where, close to where I live, that I had no idea about, that took place, you know, 30 years ago. And then I've had even up till a report as more recent as like last June. Cliff told me of a report on the coast area that was even, you know, within the last month. So it just makes sense. If you flew over the Coast Range, there's little tiny towns, and then there's a whole lot of forests. So, it's just a matter of how many are out there.
Right. You look at, you know, topo, you know, the topography maps, you look at all the amounts of valleys and hills and glens, bodies of water. I mean, Oregon and Washington and parts of Northern California, huge amounts of forests that come right up next to the ocean, stretch for just miles and miles, with abundance of food and natural resources, places to hide. You look back, Nehalem River, which is a river on the Oregon coast, there, you know, going back to Native Americans, talk about, the Native Americans fishing and hanging their fish up to dry, or you know, putting them on, you know, the side, tied up, having the Sasquatch, you know, hairy man, walk up and take it. You know, they take their fish and stuff. I mean, there's lots of reports even from the earlier days of interactions on the coast, you know, specifically with Native Americans. Like, Tillamook has got its stories, Seaside and Can be, all these areas on the coast have historical accounts that some are fascinating, and you know, some are, you know, not so fascinating, but just the correlation and the amount of sightings.
Right.
It's pretty cool stuff.
No, I had a report that I did for the BFRO several years ago that was out out in the area for Anonia and out by Mist and that way. And it was actually right, the guy lived right across the highway from the Nehalem, which winds all the way, I mean, it ends up dumping into the Pacific Ocean, but it winds all the way up through the Coast Range in the northern Oregon. And his report was that he had come out and was going to run to the grocery store at like 11:30 at night. So he's actually going to drive a ways to go to the grocery store, which would have been classic night. And there was something hooting. It had been pouring down rain up till then, and the river was really high. And the area across the river from where he lived was not easily accessible. I mean, it's gated logging roads. There's actually a cabin over there, but it's accessible by, you actually had to either go up the logging road and come a long way behind it, or there's actually a little basket you could scoot yourself across among cables above the river. But it was a dark night. There wasn't anybody over there, and he heard this hooting, and all the way it would go down the bank on the other side. He could hear movement at one point, and a hoot. And he initially thought it was an owl, but it would. Then he heard a loud splash in the river, like a big rock being thrown in the river. And his dog was out there with him, and it like turned around and sprinted back in the house. And cowered under the bed. And he finally went in and got his rifle and fired a shot off up into the air, and the hooting stopped, and then it moved down the bank a ways and started up again. It's weird. It's like, 'cause I've heard that, the rocks being thrown into water. I don't know if it's to check depth where they could cross or... but that was a pretty interesting investigation. I mean, I investigated a report up in an area near the Nehalem Bay State Park, where the kid had been was going. They had a storage shed, and they had a chicken coop, and the storage shed was on the other side of the chicken coop, and he was going to go get something out of the storage shed, and it was just about dark, and he steps out the door and shines his flashlight in the direction he's going, which is towards the chicken coop, and said there was a Bigfoot standing there looking in the chicken coop, and then the light went out. And it was weird, because this is a big kid. He probably 300 pounds. And his mind first was thinking that it's a person. So he's like, hey, what are you doing? And then he could, one of the things when you're talking to witnesses, and I always like look for it, if they've seen a real Bigfoot, they can't express enough how big it was. And this kid, like, this thing was huge. And he yelled at it, and it, like, kind of turned towards him and turned around and walked off. There was a greenway that went. And I at the time, because it's, like, on the south side of Highway 101, and I, like, boy, that's, that'd be a stretch for me. But there's actually been bear sightings and other stuff in that area. So, ironically, when I was doing the investigation and then I got done, I was driving around and there was this big sandhill. And as I was driving by, I looked and it looked like these big footprints coming down. In fact, that's the photo that I used for this episode on Facebook is from those footprints. And I'm like, if you see one of the picture that's up there is just of these large impressions. And I played around walking up and down the hill. I actually have a picture that has my footprints in it. And then these footprints, and mine are like tiny. And the stride on this, I don't know, it just looks, and this was several months later. I'm like, that'd be, possibility. It's a big. There's a big empty area there. There's a creek that goes under the road. So you never know. I mean, there's not some place I think they probably live, but probably some place they might visit. So
yeah, I
I took a report too often in the Halem before I really ever did any sort of research on it. I had fished in the Halem before and stuff like that, but I took a report from a fisherman that he went out on the Halem River fishing, just bank fishing, and he came across this pile of and he said it was a pretty good sized pile, a hefty pile, and he just thought it was kind of odd, you know, probably a raccoon or whatever, something. Then he you know, kept on fishing the whole day, and he just got this weird feeling like something was watching him, whatnot. You know, he had previously that day had found some cougar tracks on the trail he was on, pretty fresh. So you know, he's kind of wary, and it was probably kind of what spooked him. But as he was sitting there fishing, towards I think it was about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, he heard something rustling around in the bushes and trees behind him. Just something. He kept looking. He never saw anything. He heard something snapping stuff, moving around in there. Sounded, you know, he described it as kind of large. You know, he thought maybe elk or something. He didn't know. He didn't really want to go in there because he did find some cougar tracks. And you know, that went on for a little bit. And he got kind of quiet. And then all of a sudden, you know, he's fishing and he hears this bloop. Starts hearing like this plump noise, like something's falling in the water. So he's looking around, you know, and you can't figure out what this noise is. You know, just here and there, just, you know, a little something here, a little sound here. And finally, he actually, what he said was, I'm pretty sure I saw a rock actually being, like, falling in the water. Like, he saw the splash, saw it come down. And he's thinking, well, only, you know, where's this come from? And make a long story short, you know, he never actually saw what he described as possibly throwing rocks. They weren't very big. He said some of them were, you know, acorn size to maybe a quarter. They weren't big rocks. It wasn't like, you know, boulders or anything. These were small. I mean, describing the sound, you know, and possibly seeing one. He said it wasn't like a big splash. It would have been something small. And he wasn't sure they were rocks. But in that area, you know, he thought with the pile of crawdads, so that was kind of strange. It was kind of rocky, so there wasn't any real big impressions or anything to be found. But so that I've taken in other reports similar to that, where people have actually, you know, seen a rock come out of the tree line on some of these coastal rivers and whatnot. Also, I was going to mention too as well, some of the you know, Quinault and Grays Harbor, another area where close to the ocean, with lots of reports. You know, Sarah and Jonathan Brown live over that way, and they got a lot of stuff going on in their property activity, and have had actually, I've been there before when we had heard, you know, something splash, sound like a large boulder falling in, like a little bit bigger, it's a stream, but it's a little, not your average stream, it's pretty deep. You know, sound like large boulders being tossed in there, sound like something cannonballing actually off, you know, a three-story building, but real loud. With that story, real quick, you know, we were actually out therming. We had a heat signature on the therm. We were trying to make out what it was, and then behind us, we had this huge splash. I mean, just. And it was, you know, several hundred yards away. Wasn't exactly close, but huge splash. And as we make our way down there, we're hearing bloop, bloop by some little rocks or something being tossed in the water. It was pretty cool. Never found the heat signature again, too. We had turned around, and that heat signature was gone. So whatever it was, you know, no idea, but pretty interesting.
What I know is I'm pretty sure deer and elk and bears don't throw rocks. So, and I had that, you know, Jess and I had that experience this year of having, that best we could tell, it was the rock that we found the next day that within about 3 feet of where she'd been sitting that had made the loud crash on the recording. And the weirdest thing is, like, when I listened to that and she, you know, she had done a agitated chimp sound immediately before that loud crash. So, I mean, if it just, you know, I mean, maybe something fell over, I don't know. I mean, but well, the most likely scenario seemed to be that rock was the reason
having listened,
that we heard the loud crash. What's that?
Yeah, having listened to that audio myself, it it was a loud crash. You could hear. You know, we should get that on Monster X sometime. Just that little snippet. That'd be kind of cool. But
yeah,
You hear her make the noise, and then that crash. You know, you heard it, and she jumped.
It was immediate. Yeah.
Yeah. That was nuts. You know, I mean, that to me was, and it's a pretty active area as far as stuff going on in that area. And you know, there are other reports of rocks being thrown at people. So, not mind boggling to me, but it's pretty amazing. You know, the reaction and the timing. It was. And I had a sighting back in 2011, Mount Hood, and my buddies were out there, and we were out camping, and we had a rock thrown at us at 2:30 in the morning. It just missed my buddy's tent. So, I fully believe Sasquatch throws rocks. Just believing
it's a matter of what.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, you know, you already know they're real because you saw one. So, that's one of the things. What is, you know, kind of, I've always had an interest, but meeting people like yourself that are rational, you know, you're not prone to Bigfootitis where everything's Bigfoot, you know. So it just pushes the needle for me towards. I still have, until I see one, I think I'll always reserve some that maybe everybody that I've ever talked to that has had a sighting is, you know, delusional. No offense to you, Shane. But I mean, that's, you know, I think everybody that,
that's logical. No, that's the right way to approach it, period. You know, David Ellis casted a 3.25-inch track up in Olympics. So I was checking it out. While I was up at the OP, and it was impressive. It looked like a little tiny Bigfoot track. You know, it looked infantile. The heel, you know, he did a fantastic job casting it. The heel was real deep. I mean, you can see where it had some weight to it and had like it stepped on a stick and its foot kind of formed around the stick in the top substrate. And you can count four toes. There wasn't, you know, maybe there was a fifth toe, but it really, from this cast, you only really see four toes. And what that meant, I don't know. Was it deformed? Was it natural? You know, anyways, thing what I loved with, you know, the approach, you know, with OP members and people that I'm attracted to are, you said, this is a human track until proven otherwise. You know, you're not going in and going, this is a Sasquatch track, 100%. No. Let's prove what it is and before we prove what it is, you know, and I love that thought process. And David Ellis, for example, that he said, you know, this is a human or a child's footprint, track until proven otherwise, you know? And I mean, I'm looking at it going, wow, this is awesome. I mean, just the detail. And there was other evidence found around that, you know, other tracks. I think he also cast a 6-inch track, not a big one, but this area is known for sightings of juveniles, Sasquatch, small Sasquatch. So it's pretty interesting. But yeah, just that that skeptical approach or the logical approach to saying, not saying okay, this is a Sasquatch 100%, or you know, this is this and that's it. It's actually going through all the data, and you know, Occam's razor, you know.
Well, and that's the thing too, is you have to have the evidence in context. I mean, like you're saying, it's, you know, if you simply find footprints in the woods, and that's all you have, it's interesting and it's cool to have in your collection, but when somebody has, you know, found there's audio and there's prints and there's been sightings in a particular area, it's almost like, you know, you're building a case for the possibility that's what your evidence is leaning towards. And because, you know, it's just, the context, if it's you find a child-sized footprint in the snow and it's been, you know, 0 degrees out, it's actually very unlikely that it was a human out there running, their child running around in their bare feet in that kind of conditions.
Yeah, right.
So, I mean, there's, you know, the evidence has to have a context, so.
That's why you go out of your way to document everything and keep looking. And it's kind of like the audio, you know, Larry that works with us and, you know, David Ellis, part of Lynn Project, you know, it's about building patterns with the audio, you know, it's look, you know, using certain software and stuff to recognize, or at least try to recognize, you know, compelling audio and analyzing it. And then it's really cool what they're doing right now, you know, is trying to actually match vocals from individuals, you know, possible Sasquatch vocalizations, you know, to matching with, you know, within the range of just, you know, making, seeing if it could be the same individual doing this over and over again in certain areas, just like you do with, you know, humans or animals, you know. It's pretty all about building patterns, collecting all the data and doing your homework on it without jumping to conclusions, of course, because, I mean, it's all circumstantial, understandable, but much to be learned there if you can keep compiling, I think, you know. I think it's, a lot of people are making strides in the right direction. A lot of people argue, nah, and a lot of people, you know, argue the point that, yeah, you need a body. Well, it's true. You're going to need some sort of hard DNA, but it doesn't stop people from trying to figure out exactly what we're dealing with and building up all these different patterns to try and understand. I think it's amazing and awesome. A lot of people are doing some really great work out there.
No, the Olympic Project is an example of it, processes it takes to investigate something like this. They're not, you know, it's a slow process, and their goal isn't necessarily to prove a Sasquatch exists. It's about predictive behavior and trying to predict where they're going to be if they, you know, like Derek has had his own encounters and knows they exist as well. So one of the freakiest stories that I've ever heard is the one where he used where baby cries, and then went out by himself and played toes and that story, like that's one of the creepiest Bigfoot stories. If you haven't had opportunity to hear it, you should get a hold of Derek or find, I'm sure he tells it, you know, online on interviews and stuff. I know he's scheduled to be at the Florida Bigfoot Conference, so a good reason to head down there if you're interested in hearing that story. I tell you, that one. And a couple times, like when Larry and I had the weird thumping following us in the pitch black, and we never did see anything, but it always seemed to be about the same distance away. So it's like one of the things that Derek has said is they seem to know just how far to stay out of sight. And
you know, that's also, we were actually talking about that over the weekend, Gunner, talking about that how come they managed to stay the certain distance. I mean, in ports, people are like, no, they're right there, but I just can't see. I mean, they're just behind this tree or those bushes. I just can't, you know, they know how far to stay. The discussion is kind of about was the intelligence, just how intelligent is a Sasquatch, you know, and nobody knows, I mean, obviously, but he was just trying to fathom because of a lot of what's reported, you know, especially with the being able to stay away that distance without being seen or discovered, you know, when they're harassing or doing what they do to people, you know, during sightings or just during encounters. pretty amazing, and it's kind of hard to fathom, you know, for a lot of people, including myself. I mean, how intelligent it must be.
Well, and that's the, but there's other animal behavior. I mean, how did deer and elk learn that by standing still that, you know, that they're much less likely to be seen? That's mm-hmm. that's a form, part of their camouflage is to stand still, you know. So I'm, you know, that they, and we're talking about something that an animal that seems to be more intelligent than a deer or a elk, you know, other known animals in the forest,
yeah.
all the way up to the, you know, they're a tribe of or a different species on the same, a different branch of our, that we are on the other branch. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's possible. I mean, we just don't know until they're proven, until we know, you know, where they're, what their nature really is. We have a lot of speculation, but not much hard data, so.
Yeah. Working on that.
Yeah. Well, who knows? I mean, eventually it just could happen. So, hey, we've got a caller in that's been in the queue for a while. I'm going to check and see if they've got a question before we get to the end here. Hey, area code 859. Do you have a question?
Yeah, guys. This is Bo Owens of Kentucky Bigfoot Haunts. And, a while ago, you guys mentioned somebody used baby cries, you know, mm-hmm. and I've done that. I did that once, and I got the feedback I got was incredible. I got some incredible audio. I just left the thermal camera sitting, and I went in another part of the woods to set up some cameras. And when I brought it back home and listened to it, it was like Christmas. It, you can hear whoops, growls, thumps, all kinds of stuff. And in a couple of weeks, I could play it for you guys. You want to hear it?
I'm gonna write down your number right now. So.
Okay. Yeah. I won't be on next Sunday. Next Sunday, Super Bowl.
Yeah, I'm wondering if we should actually not do a show next Sunday. We'd probably be talking to ourselves. But
yeah, really.
I think so.
Because you know, I know that I'll probably be watching the Super Bowl, so it might be loud in the background. If
yeah, it probably would. You know, but on my Facebook site there, Kentucky Bigfoot Haunts. I got a video there of me and my nephew. We found a footprint, and it was in February. And you know, it's a huge print. And I set my foot down next to it, and you can compare it to the size of that one. And it was like on a hard gravel road, so you know, it's pretty convincing.
That's pretty cool.
But,
I mean, there's
yeah. And,
so you used baby cries too, and got. I'm almost a little concerned after hearing the Derek story.
Okay, I didn't hear his story.
And you did use baby cries, but
was he attacked?
No, but it was a very aggressive crashing, coming in his direction. And then it would have been out of sight. So,
yeah,
right.
Breathing, all that. You know, this was up in this is miles and miles and miles out in the middle of nowhere, up near the Blue Mountains of Washington.
Mm-hmm.
In the Blue Mountains, and yeah, it was you know, he had played this. It actually was his own child, and they had recorded, and he looped it.
Wow.
So it played over and over again, and had something coming down from a ridgeline crash through. I mean, he played for hours, got a crash through the ridgeline. Crossing a field, coming up to basically a little, I think, a stream that separated him from, like, the woods. And he never actually saw it. He just heard breathing. But he did find there was an impression there the next day, a track on the other side of the stream, right you know, right where he was at. It was pretty crazy stuff. I mean, a pretty hairy encounter.
Oh, yeah.
It was one of those stories that probably seemed like a good idea at the time. Because he questioned his own judgment about it. Sitting in the woods hearing that thing coming in his direction.
Yeah, he said he never wanted to, at that moment there, he was not, he wanted out of Bigfoot and he didn't want to do it anymore. He was done.
I can imagine. I've experienced the Bigfoot. The times I've seen them, I've always had somebody with me. But I always had better luck when I go up squatching alone. I get better results. I don't know. Like camera-wise and audio-wise, I always capture stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's good to know that, you know, you go out and test things and see what works and what doesn't. I know that one of the craziest encounters that came out of our area was when Larry was out there by himself. In fact, after that encounter, he doesn't want to do it again, so he thinks all the rest of us should do it as part of initiation. But I'm happy to live vicariously through his tent experience. And I'm good with that. If Shane wants to go out there and go by himself and record that, I'm happy to support him in that.
Yeah.
You guys, would you guys like to hear about my first encounter? I was 14.
Sure. We got a couple minutes left, so.
Okay. This is back in the late 70s, and me and my dad, he's gone now, and my brother, we went camping there in Northern California on the Trinity River. We heard this loud crashing across the river from us, and it was really loud, and we didn't know, we didn't know what it was across the river there. But anyway, after nightfall, my dad saw him with the high beam flashlight. He saw three Bigfoots. It was like the parents and then a youngling, a juvenile Bigfoot. And he would shine the light in their eyes, and they glowed red. And the adults, his head was like 3 foot wide. And my dad, he stood there and watched them all night, and me and my brother, we crashed out. And they stood and stared at each other all night. And my dad said he counted 28 UFOs overhead that night. It was something else.
I don't know. That's interesting, the UFO connection. So,
right.
Well, we've got about a minute left. I'll remind you that actually, I think we're not going to have a show next week because we've got I'm sure that everybody's going to be interested in the outcome of the Seahawks' second Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah. I'm for the Hawks, too.
What's that?
I said I'm going for the Seahawks, too.
Okay, good, yeah. Hopefully we won't have another football inflate-gate, but... So, thanks everybody for coming and listening to Monster X this weekend.
Yeah.
Thanks, Shane.
Thank you
for a caller. I'll get a hold of you and we'll have you on in a couple of weeks.
Okay, cool. That'd be great.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
And remember to go to www.squatchcoffee.com and get your Sasquatch coffee. Support our sponsor. All right. Thanks a lot. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.